Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and our show today is brought to you by Moda Fabrics. You can visit them at themodabakeshop.com or United Notions website, where you can find all their goodies. I have got Doug Leko on, who is the man behind Antler Quilt Designs. Doug actually grew up in a quilt shop, or at least I'm going to find out if that's really true or not. And then he started his pattern business basically when he was, 14 years old. I mean, how many people do that? So this is just really cool. I'm so excited to have Doug on the show today. So hi, Doug. How are you?
I am good, Pat. And I am honored to be on your show today.
Oh, I'm thrilled to have you here. Did you really grow up in a quilt shop?
I did, yes. We opened a quilt shop as a family quilt shop when I was about 10, 11 years old.
Wow.
So I kind of grew up with that in my background, so we just closed that a couple years ago. So, to grow up with that.
You know, it's so interesting to find people who started that young and then are still continuing, because sometimes, it's just what your family does. It's not the passion that you end up with.
Yep.
Did you start quilting like when you were 10, when your family opened the shop?
No, my mom actually taught me to quilt when I was about 5, 6 years old. So it was one of those, it was kind of a passion before the quilt shop. And then, she taught me to quilt, and then I quilted kind of off and on for several years.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we opened the quilt shop, I kind of got more prolific into it. So.
Yeah, wow. Yesterday we have a local shop here in Virginia called Susie's Quilt Shop, and her 10-year-old is working there this summer with them.
Very cool, yeah.
Yeah, so I was thinking of you and told them that when they come to market, they have to come and meet you. So,
okay.
Now, when you were, decided to start a pattern business, what did you think anything of it at 14? I mean, it's just like, oh, yeah, let's just do this. Or was it a big decision?
It was kind of a big decision. As we were, as my mom and I, we were meeting with fabric reps, ordering fabric for our store. Mm-hmm. I was seeing kind of the trends of patterns where it was coming up really, really big piecing, easy piecing, not a lot of piecing. And I like more the traditional look, as you can tell by a lot of my patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted patterns that had the traditional look, and then there were more pieces to them, and also had just a different kind of style of quilting to them. So that's kind of what I went after when I started Antler Quilt Design. And it's just kind of, it's been fun to see where it goes. So I think every pattern I try to make looks different than the first one. So.
I just love your patterns. Yours have such a great balance, your colors and the blocks. Do you do a lot of mixing of blocks, like more than one block in a quilt?
Yes, I play with the blocks. I don't always like to have the quilts just be the one block.
Mm-hmm.
I like to take a couple blocks and like kind of redesign them or replay with them or even draw brand new blocks that you kind of just kind of dream up, if you want to say, and kind of make up the quilt as you go, if you want to. You want to call it that. So that's always fun to play with the quilts that way. So, and I love to just play with color. Color is one of my favorite things with the whole quilting process, is the color and picking out everything. So,
well, I was out at your site, antlerquiltdesign.com, for people to find you. And I love your quilt called Warm Winter Wishes. That looks like a two block quilt.
Yep, that was designed for our state shop up in Minnesota. We have a state shop up that's on its 7th year. We just finished our 7th year a couple weeks,
wow,
couple days ago. And that was designed for a couple years ago for a Holly Taylor exclusive line for our shop hop. So, yeah, that's a big, really popular one.
Yeah. It's when you say winter and it's blues and it looks sort of grays and creams. Lovely. So tell me, Doug, what is it about color? You told me that you really love color. What draws you to that?
I think what draws me to color more is if you have like a border piece or a main fabric, like I like to call it like a large floral or something,
mm-hmm,
that just is one of those that kind of like strikes your, fancy, and you just love it how it looks, and you just love all the colors to it, or you just even like the two-tonal, the florals or the large prints, and you can just go off and you can pull 100 colors, and, you can just dwindle. I always love to, when I work at a local quilt shop,
mm-hmm,
and when I pick a quilt for a customer, I love to have them find like a border print or find a feature fabric that they love to use.
Mm-hmm.
And then I take and I cover the whole entire cutting table full of like 50, 60 different bolts when we pick up a quilt, for a scrappy project. And then we dwindle it down to what we really need.
Oh,
and
that way
we can pick all the right hues and the right values and everything, and get all the great colors that they want to pull out of the fabric and everything.
So have you been helping customers like that since you were young? I mean, is that one of the things you loved when your family had the store?
Yep, when we opened our store in 2006, I was, what do you want to say, like a greeter. Mm-hmm. And I could cut fabric and everything, and I helped customers. I kind of did everything, but yeah, I greeted a lot of people, and it was funny as I, you know, it was one of those, well, where's your mom, you know, and then people mm-hmm. would find out that my mom was the owner, so that was that was always a fun to kind of to have people go, oh, you are the owner's son, you know, so that was really interesting.
So now that you're your own designer and you're out teaching, you know, what do you find helps students most or helps quilters most pick color?
To pick color, I would say it has to be kind of what they like. I know a mm-hmm. lot of people, you know, when they go to classes, they kind of have to have a kit or something. And then with my classes, I love to have people bring fabrics and we select the fabrics, or they can get a kit that I work with the quilt shop and mm-hmm. the quilt shop can put the kit together. But I always just tell people if they're not sure, if they're unsure of what to bring to class, just bring mm-hmm. all your works and we'll decide it in class. So, because between me and them, we'll figure out what they like and then mm-hmm. we'll kind of dwindle it down to what they need.
Do you ever find that people say to you, Doug, you know, oh, well, I have this piece of fabric for so long, but, you know, I don't really like it, but I want to use it. Does that happen to you?
Yes, it does. Yep. Or they don't want to cut it up. How can I use this fabric, but I don't want to cut it up?
Yeah.
So, and then that was kind of one of those like, oh, genius idea. I should come up with a couple of patterns that, you know, that I can use or I can create and people can use, like their large florals that they don't cut them up, you know, and mm-hmm. you can use them. So I've done a couple of patterns where you get to use the large florals and they don't cut them up, but they still get to use them in the quilt and see mm-hmm. the pieces to them. So.
Right. Big chunks. I was looking at your Alaskan bog mm-hmm. Quilt because it has some really nice big squares in there that people could showcase those special fabrics.
Yes. Yeah, that was a really popular one, and it's great for different backgrounds and different florals. And I'm actually in the process of remaking it right now in a different colorway, so that will come out soon. So,
yeah. So, what do you tell people when they have that fabric that they say they don't like it, but they like have guilt, you know, because they own it and they think they should use it?
I tell them to put it aside if your gut's not letting you use it right now or you don't want to use it right now. I tell mm-hmm. them to put it aside, and the perfect project will come up because they'll know that. And I tell them I even have fabric in my stash that it's one of those where it's like, okay, I love this fabric. I love this batik. You know, mm-hmm. I want to use this someday, but I don't know what yet. And then I kind of just put it aside. And then, when I come up with a new pattern, I go to it and go, okay, is this the project that I can use it on? And then it's, you know, and then it's like, okay, I'll wait on it because something else might come out, you know, better. So
I know. How do you sort your fabric, Doug?
I have it sorted by color.
By color. Okay, yep, so do you mix your batiks and your cottons and wovens and...
Nope, I have everything. So like, I have like a cream shelf, I have like a red shelf, I have just this everything sorted, and then I have like a batik shelf, and it's sorted by colors and cuts and quantities.
All right, and so is it really tidy? Are you a tidy person?
I try to be.
So we could come in, it looks like a quilt shop in your studio.
Yes, most of the time, yeah. Especially or not around market time. Market time, it just kind of turns into a little disaster, but.
I know. Some of us are very, very tidy workers and some, mm-hmm. You know, just always, they know where it is though, don't they? They know where that perfect thing is.
Yep, or where you go, we got to go right to the fabric shelf to grab it because you know right where that fabric is.
Right, right. So now you have done some projects for American Patchwork and Quilting Family Magazines, and one of them is online. So people can go to allpeoplequilt.com and just put in your name, Doug Leko, L-E-K-O. And the pattern is done in a second colorway, so it's called Bundle of Joy. Tell me a little bit about it.
Yes, the pattern is A Dash of Autumn. And when I came up with that quilt, I wanted a fall color quilt. And then that was really fun to see when I made the fall color quilt for them last year, and people laugh when I tell them I made it a year ago, you know, because they needed to take it with the picture. And then they actually made the little kids colorway. So I didn't actually make that one, but they chose some fun fabrics to showcase the quilt out of a different fun one. And that is actually just one block turned several different ways.
Oh, really?
Yep, that is just one block. A lot of people look at it and go, oh, okay, that's a block. And it's like, oh, I'll show you how easier, you know, much more easy it is.
Yeah. Oh, well, that is clever. Now, I would have thought the same thing, that there was more than one block. So that is fantastic. I love the center because it really goes from the center out. It's like a radiating quilt in a way. It's small, but it, you know, it's that center is the focus.
Yeah. And I love it that they gave you several different options. So, cause I came up with the, what do you want to say? The lap size, the large lap size. And then they came up with like the baby and the twin and the queen and stuff. They have several different ones in the magazine, which is really nice.
Neat. Oh, neat. Oh, everybody can go out there and get that one. So what is your favorite part of the quilting process, Doug?
I would probably have to say the favorite one is actually piecing it, picking the fabrics and piecing the quilt.
Oh.
You can count that as one. So I just love to piece. I like to sit down. It's good. It's kind of, what do you want to say, good therapy almost, if you just sit
right
down and you're, you know, either by yourself or with a group of friends,
uh-huh,
and you just sit down and you just piece away and you just kind of just keep going and going and going until it's done. So.
And when you're in class, don't you like really want to sit and sew by the end of the day when you've watched all your students?
Yes. Yeah, when I'm in class and it's like after I'm listening to the teachers and instructors all day, it's one of those. It's like by the end of the day, I have a page in my back of my notebook that's full of doodles and stuff.
Yeah.
So, to either play on the long arm with or to, you know, make patterns up. So.
Right. So you are going to college full time now, right?
I will be going to college full time. I've been going part time and I'll go full time here this fall.
Ah, so what is your degree in?
It'll be in business administration right now. Uh-huh. And then I hope to go back for business or sales and marketing.
Cool. That's a busy life you have. So you do have some helpers since you're doing so much?
Yep, I do. I have about 3 sample sewers. Mm-hmm. And then my mom loves to pattern edit, and so she helps me with the pattern edits. And everybody kind of just takes a part and helps me, so that's awesome that I have all those helpers. So, but I usually do make all the samples, and I have a couple of the 3 other ladies that make additional samples of the quilts. So,
right, because your pieces will go travel to stores, right? Some of them?
Yep, some of them go to like the fabric companies. I send quilts down to Moda, and then they send them out on trunk shows, or I send them out on trunk shows myself, or I just have them at a local quilt shops to sell the patterns. So yeah, it's good. I like to have 3-4 different samples of each pattern, so we can do that.
And that takes time. People don't always realize, you know, to make the same quilt multiple times on a deadline, right, Doug?
Yes, it does take lots of time, yes.
So are you planning to go to the next trade show here this fall?
I am, yes. I have a couple new and exciting things coming out at fall, so that's really fun. I'm getting going and trying to finish ahead of schedule before, you know, versus right up to the day of market. So
That's a plan we all have, right?
It is, exactly. And I think everybody tries for that, but we'll see what happens.
Right. We'll see what happens. Well, Doug, this has been absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Pat. It's been wonderful.
Everybody should go visit Doug out at antlerquiltdesign.com. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we'll be right back after the break.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. When a bird's nest of thread appears either on top or underneath your fabric, the likely culprit is your upper thread tension. If loops appear on the underside of the fabric, the upper thread tension may be too loose. If knots appear on top of the fabric, the upper tension may be too tight.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I'm so excited today to have a lot of really, really cool guests on. We have a bunch of topics to go over. And first up, I have designer Katie Blakesley from Swim Bike Quilt. And I'm sure you've been out to her blog where she does a lot of really awesome things. She's a co-author of a book called Vintage Quilt Revival. And she also does this amazing charity work, which I'm really excited for her to tell us about. So welcome to the show, Katie.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks so much for having me on.
You know, I just have to ask you, because I don't think I know, why Swim Bike Quilt? What made you pick that name?
So I started blogging in 2009, and I was pregnant at the time, and I was really eager to get back to my normal activity, which at the time included triathlons. Triathlons are swim, bike, run events, and it's something I really enjoyed. I had just started quilting a lot, and my husband joked, I don't particularly like running, so my husband kind of said, hey, if a triathlon was swim, bike, quilt, it would be like your perfect life, and so... it just kind of stuck. It's something that's easily, it's memorable, and it's also something that really explains who I am.
Wow. And do you still, are you still really, you know, healthy and bike and swim?
Yeah, I enjoy both of them. I'm recovering from a torn calf this summer.
Ooh.
So there's been more swimming and biking, a little bit less running, but yeah, it's something that it's kind of a hobby of mine. It's good stress relief and something I really enjoy.
Oh, that's great. I mean, I wish I had that kind of motivation, Katie. You know, I'm going to come rub elbows with you. That's I try. Let's talk a little bit. I hope you've been doing a lot of quilting, too, since you got quilt in that title. You got to.
You know what? This would actually make you laugh. I have a good friend, and he once joked, he said, you know, if you did as much swimming or biking as you did quilting, I'm pretty sure you would have been able to bike across the United States. So don't worry, the quilting definitely doesn't suffer.
Good news. I wanted you to tell me a little bit about the charity event that you host and have been hosting for quite a few years now called 100 Quilts for Kids. This is just a great thing that you're doing.
Oh, thank you. It's something that I really enjoy. So there's kind of an interesting story behind it, if you don't mind me telling.
I'd love to.
In November 2010, so this is the fourth year that I've been doing this. Back in November 2010, my husband is the head of our local Mormon congregation, and there was a woman who was kind of in a crisis situation, and I had been asked to find local resources for domestic violence shelters and kind of the protocol for that in case there was a window of time for her to leave. And one night in the middle of the night, he got a phone call, and she was able to leave that situation. And she had a two-month-old baby at the time, and I had a two-month-old baby at the time. And I just spent 5 minutes getting everything I could, diapers, some formula. I had made my daughter a receiving blanket and just, you know, put them in a plastic bag and gave them to my husband, and they were able to get her out of that situation. And I just stayed up all night, and I thought, there has to be something that I could do. There's so many quilters who make such beautiful things, and I really do think that quilts can be a source of comfort. They can be a source of beauty. And I thought, you know, I could maybe do something about this. And so I talked with some friends and started this quilt drive. And I think the thing that's a little bit unique about this quilt drive is I suggest that people donate the quilts in their own community. So it's kind of an online-based quilt drive. It's fun. There's prizes. Often there's a quilt along. But the idea is to make a quilt and donate it in your own community. And then obviously if somebody doesn't have a place to donate it to, there's a list of groups, you know, from Project Linus to Bumblebeans Basic to Margaret's Hope Chest that I suggest people send their quilts to.
And so how long do you run this sort of, you know, sew-along and challenge?
So this year, you know, I've played around with different times, and I've just decided people are busy all of the time, but people always want to help. So it's July 1st to September 30th.
Okay.
So it's kind of about a three-month period of time.
And that's basically when you have your main focus for it. That's like when on your site you're talking about
it. Yeah, on my site I talk about it. Or this year I'm not doing a quilt along, but there is kind of a free pattern that is available if people would like to make it.
And you actually have a tab on your website, swimbikequilt.com, called 100 Quilts for Kids. And so that's where your sort of current information is, right?
Right, yep. And you can click on it, and it'll give pictures from the past, and it's just a photo. So you can click on the different photos and find what you're looking for.
Excellent. And I love that Starbright quilt. That's just fun and happy and cheerful.
Thanks. It's fun. It's just kind of a basic patchwork quilt with an off-centered star, but somebody described it as calm but still packs a punch, and that's kind of what I was looking for. So.
Yeah. Excellent. So let's change gears a little bit. I am super excited about the book that you have written with your friends, Vintage Quilt Revival. Tell me about it.
Well, first, I have so many good things to say about my co-authors. I really enjoyed writing a book as a team. It's Lee Heinrich from Freshly Pieced and Faith Jones from Fresh Lemons Quilts. But basically, all three of us have a real love of traditional and modern quilting, and we wanted to write a book that would combine the two, give people who are perhaps a little bit more of a modern bent a kind of a primer on historic and vintage quilts, and then people who really enjoy kind of traditional block-based quilting a couple of ideas of how to change up their quilts a little bit.
So what is your favorite quilt that you worked on for the book?
So my favorite quilt is called Times Square. I took a traditional kind of graphic quilt block called the Art Square block, and I used really bold colors. There's a red, orange, and yellow, and it's kind of hard to explain, but basically there is one kind of off-centered block. And then I used a log cabin or kind of pineapple method and repeated elements of that block, you know, kind of in a square around the block a couple of times. So it's kind of a twist on the traditional pineapple block. And then it has a lot of expansive negative space with a bright red binding. And it's a pretty graphic quilt, I think, and it's really easy to make. And so some of the quilts are paper piece in a little, they take a little bit more time, but this this is a really quick and easy quilt that is just a lot of fun.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. When does the book come out?
So the book is out the 1st of December. You can pre-order it on Amazon and, you know, through other bookselling sites, but it'll finally launch in December.
I know. Doesn't it seem like forever once you send your quilts in that the book comes
really
out?
Does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It actually goes to press, I think, this week. So we're really excited about that.
Exciting. Exciting. You have children and are they sewing with you?
You know, my daughter is almost 4 and she thinks that I can sew anything, which is pretty awesome. And if it's a quilt, I pretty much can, but clothing's a little bit different. I did stay up really a little too late last night and worked on a little knit dress for her, so that's been fun. She'll say, "I'll stay in my bed if you make me a dress." I think it's not quite that easy, but we just made a quilt for her bed, and she, every couple of days or weeks, she would come over and say, "Mama, we need to work on my quilt," and she'd sit on my lap and push the button that cuts the threads, and she really enjoyed that, so she's telling everybody, "We finally finished the quilt and it's on her bed," and she tells everybody, "I made that and my mama helped."
Oh, you helped. Yes. Well, fantastic. Now we only have like about a minute, believe it or not. Can you tell me what your favorite part of the process of quilt making is?
You know, my favorite part of the process is the very first step. I love choosing colors and patterns, which makes the quilting process kind of long when you do your favorite part first. But I really enjoy making baby quilts. especially for family and friends. I have three new nieces and nephews that were born in the last couple of weeks, and I don't live near any of them, and I really, I don't know, somehow sending a quilt to my sister or my brother really helps me to feel a part of the baby's lives, and I've really enjoyed that.
I think that's the best part, too. It's like sometimes I think, isn't there a baby around I can send a quilt to? Because it's so satisfying. And they're and they're not so big. What is your best size for a baby quilt? What do you usually make?
You know, the two that I made, one was about 40 by 46, and the other one was a little bit bigger than that. Sometimes I like to make them a little bit bigger so they can grow with the baby.
Oh, that's a good point, you know, because they don't stay that itty-bitty size that long.
Yeah, especially if it's for a niece or a nephew, I'll go a little bit bigger. So otherwise, you know, kind of maybe the 36 to 40 inches is kind of my go-to baby size.
Well, Katie, this has been wonderful to have you on the show.
Thanks so much, Pat. I really have enjoyed listening to your show and enjoyed being a guest on it.
Well, I want everybody to visit Katie at swimbikequilt.com. Check out the 100 quilts for kids and all the other fun things. Visit her regularly like I do. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we have got a quilter who has started quilting since he was very, very young. Be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. A feeder scrap of fabric placed at the beginning of stitching saves thread and ensures tangles will be in the scrap and not in the block.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I'm really excited to have Annabelle Wrigley back on. She is an author and the owner of the Little Pincushion Studio in Warrenton, Virginia. She loves to teach children, and when she was on before, she told us a lot about her book and her background, but I really wanted to get more in depth about actually teaching children to quilt. And Annabelle is passionate about this. Thanks for coming back on, Annabelle.
Thanks so much for having me, Pat.
So when you get ready to teach a child, you know, are there certain ages that's better? What are you finding? Because you're teaching a lot of children.
I am teaching a lot of children, and it's difficult to say what the perfect age is. I generally will start them on the sewing machine at around 7, but I do some classes with younger ones, doing a bit of hand sewing when they're maybe 5 or 6 even. And I think there's this notion that children are not ready to handle a sewing machine until they're a little bit older, but I really think you'd be surprised when you see some of these 7-year-olds on the sewing machine. It's pretty amazing.
Well, you know, I just talked in the earlier segment to Doug Lico, who started when he was like 5.
Yeah.
So and his mother owned a quilt shop, and, you know, so he, you know, he took to it early. I bet you have to read the child, too.
You really do have to read the child, because some children just can't, just have a really difficult time sort of getting that concept. And I think the hardest thing is getting that control of the foot pedal and the speed. And so you do have to read the child, absolutely. So it's different for everybody. It certainly is different for everyone, yeah.
So if you're, you know, sort of prepping, let's say, you know, you've got a kid with, whether it's your child or grandchild or neighbor's, you know, child that you want to teach. What kind of a kit should you put together, for the actual starting to teach them? You know, what is the basics that we should have?
Okay. I think it's really important that you have some felt to work on. I think that's a really good starting place for a bit of hand sewing because it's easy to use, it's easy to push your needle through, larger needles for that. And then in terms of sewing machine kit to put together, I would just have some inexpensive fabric to work on. Possibly my favorite, which is that sort of unbleached cotton twill utility fabric that you can get everywhere. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great thing to work on. One of those erasable pens, and I'm really into the Pilot Friction pen. I use it a lot in class to draw and then have them sew on top of, and then you can iron it off.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea. Because
I use it. It's like been a game changer for me, that product.
Yeah. Wow.
And I think, you know, and then your basic sewing supplies. But I, you know, I really think it's great to start off on felt. And it's great to start with a bit of hand sewing. But after that, that canvas fabric is like my go-to. I buy it by the bolt. Mm-hmm. And it's just a great way to start kids off, for sure.
You know, I never thought of using, that's like a bit of stiffer fabric. So it's probably a little bit easier for them to handle it by hand and machine.
Right. What I generally do is I cut a piece of that fabric and then I rule lines onto it, line after line after line. And then I'll do some curly lines and then I'll have it going into a bit of a zigzag. And then I start them off sewing on that with a fun colored thread. Mm. And the goal is for them to continue, keep sewing until they have that control where they're, at first, they're a little bit like going crazy, and then they really get focused on that line, and that line becomes the goal, and I'm going to get it, and I'm going to go slow, and I'm going to, you know. So we do that, and then as we work our way across the fabric, we change our thread colors, so it kind of makes it fun, and they don't realize that they're learning to thread the machine over and over again. They just feel like they're picking a new fun color, but it's all part of that learning process, and we just work through that, and doing that, we learn how to sew around curves, and we also learn how to sort of pivot the sewing machine around corners. And for them, they don't realize that they're doing that. They just think that I'm really going to master this zigzag. And so in that process of creating something, they're actually learning at the same time. And I start everybody off, no matter how old they are, with that project.
You're like a bit of a psychologist, Annabelle.
That's funny. I actually come from a background of psych nursing, so that could be true.
There you go. See, it's coming into play.
I never thought of that.
That's right, because, you know, I think it's actually, when you said change the thread color, that is brilliant, because they're going to get excited. They're going to get bored if they're doing the same thing, aren't they?
They are going to get bored. And then what you can do is you can make that canvas your canvas pretty much. Mm-hmm. So just because you have those lines, then you can say, okay, here's the pen. What are you going to do now? And then they can go across ways and they end up creating this really cool textile. But in creating that textile, they're learning control and speed and everything else. Mm-hmm. And then it's that textile that we use for our first project. So that piece of fabric will be turned into a different project based on their skills. So the younger ones we usually make into like a really cute little simple envelope bag. Mm. And then the older ones we could incorporate that into a pillow or something else. So it kind of becomes their work of art in the end. And it's such a lovely reminder of the first time they learned how to sew, if you know what I mean. Because we iron off those pen marks and I've let them go crazy with stitch, you know, readjusting the sewing machine onto different stitches so they can experiment. And it's fun. It's good. I think it's a great start off way to teach children.
And do you think, you know, that it helps? Have you ever done it where you don't have them put any thread first? I know some people have been taught that way, like years ago by their own mom, to sew without any thread at first.
And I've heard of some people doing it on paper. But I've never done it that way. I'm just all in.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, let's do it. Let's go. Because all of those times that we're doing all of that, we're learning as we go. So Yeah.
So now how do you get the little ones at the machine? Well, I'm just going to sort of focus on machine. How do you get them at the machine so that they can, like, reach the foot pedal and all those sort of ergonomic issues that their height brings in?
I quite often will use, like, a box or a little trash can or something if I need to. Mm-hmm. And I just have them on stools, and I have them at a table side by side, and I sit in between them. So usually when I have my young ones, I'll just have two of them, and I'll be between them so that I can control. Mm-hmm. I can jump in, kind of like, yeah, I'm a driving instructor or something.
Right.
And I can move from one machine to the other. But, you know, it's really simple. I know that people will probably disagree with me with what mm-hmm. another thing I do, and that's quite often to take their shoe off.
Oh.
Oh, a lot of people learning.
Sell, yeah, a lot of people sell without their shoes now. Do a poll of the adults.
Just when they're learning, because yeah, if they have some fancy little sneaker on, it's really yeah hard to control that foot pressure and to learn that. Mm-hmm. But if you have your shoe off, you can really feel that heel on the ground and really sort of feel that control. And that's usually how I start kids off as well.
Yeah, that makes sense, because they do wear some pretty crazy shoes and they can't tell anything that's going on, can they?
I know. And when you have someone that's just like a crazy, speedy, like, row, 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 sower, you're like, hang on.
Right.
Are you wearing like platform shoes down there?
And right.
They usually are.
Yeah. So they can't even feel what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, perfect, perfect. So let's talk a little bit about the ones who come in that are, I would say, the tweens, you know, mm-hmm. That age where they're going to have a style, you know, versus the
right
little ones. Well, I'm sure some of the little ones have a style too, but
yeah,
how do you approach the project that you would pick for, you know, someone stylish that comes in and wants to sew his or her own thing?
Well, I like to really talk to them when they come in the first time about, you know, what kind of things they're hoping to learn how to make. And then we sort of go from there and brainstorm ideas. I'm constantly looking for new projects. I'm always having a look online, or I'm always trying to come up with things myself that are going to keep them from being bored, that are going to keep them from thinking that sewing is for little kids or, you know, not cool, because we want them to realize that sewing is pretty cool. And so quite often that ends up being accessories. Mm-hmm. Or it's things for their bedrooms. And so with things for their bedrooms, we have just so many places we can go with that. Mm-hmm. And but I really do make it a class decision. We, you know, with the younger ones, I plan all the projects. But mm-hmm. with the older ones, I like to get them involved in that project part. And, you know, I think we had talked briefly before about using Pinterest as
right
a tool for the older girls, and I really do believe in it, and I'm planning it because I start classes next week.
Mm-hmm.
And we will have a group board where they can pin things that inspire them on Pinterest,
perfect,
to our group board, and then I can look at that and we can work out sort of how, where we go from there and how we can get creative.
Yeah, that's something anybody can do with their children or with their help.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You'd be amazed. You think that you know what they love, but you really mm-hmm. don't. And so it's such a great thing to see what it is that really appeals to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
perfect.
They're the ones learning. They want to learn how they want to learn, if you know
right
what I mean. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Annabelle, this has been really, really great information. I want people to look at your book too, because this is projects that they can use with these tips that you just gave us. Your book's We Love to Sew from C&T. So give us your website so people can come see what you're doing with your students.
Great. Well, my website is littlepincushionstudio.com, and there's a link there that goes to my workshop. So if you live locally and you want to come and take a workshop, I have a few things up there. I do some beginner workshops.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also just post a lot of projects that we do in class, so that, you know, I like people to see how awesome and creative these kids are. And we had a clean sweep at the county fair just recently too with all our great projects. So, and I have put those things up there as well.
Fantastic. Well, thank
yeah
you, Annabelle, for being
thank you so
on.
Much. Thank you for having me, Pat.
Well, this is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We're going to take a little break and we'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts and More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Babylock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. It was absolutely fabulous to talk to Annabelle about working with kids. And you can find more sort of topics about working with kids in our issues of American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine and Quilts and More. Now we have a segment coming up that I did with Jennifer Keltner, the editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, about how they make the quilt sampler issues. This is just fantastic insider information. So let's go to it. Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and today I am actually at the offices of American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine. I am in their studio. They have a fabulous recording studio here at the building, the offices in Des Moines, Iowa, and I'm with editor Jennifer Keltner. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Pat.
This is going to be so much fun because we're going to do a couple of different talks about how some of the magazines are actually produced. I think that's really interesting. People don't always know what goes on behind the scenes.
And I know what goes on behind the scenes, so I'm happy to share that with you today.
Well, let's go with the quilt sampler issue because that one is so exciting. People collect it. They use it to take their vacations. How did that idea come about?
It actually came about in the mid-1990s, and I remember when I first started at the magazine around 2000, hearing the talk in the office about when they first conceived the idea, people wondering, like, would people really want a magazine just of quilt shops and places they could go? I mean, who would really read that? Well, little did they know that quilters were so passionate about not just going to the shop in their own town, but when they were vacationing or they were traveling through other places, having a chance to stop in different shops they might not discover on their own.
And that started out just once a year and then went to twice a year?
Absolutely. So Now we produce it twice a year in May and September every year. And the on-sale date changes a little bit at newsstands, but it's generally around the first week or before the 10th of the month that it goes on sale, those two times a year.
So I'm really curious, you know, how do you decide what stores to go to or what shops you're going to put in these issues?
That's the exciting part. I always say it would be most fun if it could just be the research of our editors going out there and doing all that quilt shop hopping. But we do, of course, do that when we travel ourselves. But really, the input for this magazine comes from both our readers and the quilt shops themselves. So we invite readers who know of a great shop in their area to send that to us. We have an email address. It's apq@meredith.com. And Meredith is MEREDITH. So if you send an email to apq@meredith.com and in the subject line put quilt sampler shop nomination, we will print all of those out so that we have those shops to consider. And if we don't have information in our files about that shop, we'll also let that shop owner know that we're looking for some more information. So the second part of that is, besides nominations that come in from our readers and fans of Quilt Sampler Magazine, mm-hmm. we also invite shops to send in information about themselves.
So they can sort of do a proposal.
A little bit. Right. We have a few questions that we ask them. We have a nomination form on our website at allpeoplequilt.com that they can download. And mostly it's just letting us know what's unique about their store, what makes it different from other shops. And also then they send us a few pictures. We ask them for not more than 25 photos of the shop that they send to us. And we use those to really get a feel for what it's like, because we know quilt sampler is a really visual treat for people who read it, and those photos are really important in helping us make our decision.
So you must have hundreds of shops to look at when you're trying to put together one magazine. How crazy is that?
It's very crazy, and it sort of fuels your fire to do more research, I say. we have thousands of quilt shops that we consider over the years, and we keep that information in our files, and we always add to it. So we ask shops to update their information at least once a year so that we have their latest newsletter or their latest information, or even updating their photos, because we know the feeling of the shop might change over time as they get different inventory and different displays. But at any given issue, I would say we have probably between 250 and 400 shops that will send us updated or new information that we're considering from to pick those 10 shops.
Wow. And do you have a panel, or, you know, do you actually have to go to the store?
No, I wish we did. Oh, sometimes I try to make a case for that. If they're in really fun, exotic locations, I'm like, I'll go, I'll take one for the team. But no, we don't actually visit the shops. It really is based on those nominations and the information and photos we get from the shops and the readers. And so we do have a panel, and what we do is sort of narrow it down. And I always tell people when they say, well, I can't believe my shop isn't in there, or you haven't heard about us. And I say, you know, when we're looking at that many nomination letters, we probably have less than a minute to look through that first round, because we're reading, you know, 400 of them potentially.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, put your most important photos and your most important information in that top page so that we get that. And then we narrow it down from there. And so from 400, we might go down to 100 or 125. And then in the next round, we spend another few minutes with all of those files and then get it down to maybe 40 shops. And then from there, we narrow it down again. So every time you're digging a little bit deeper into the information.
When you finally have the group that you're going to put in the next issue, do you call the store? How do they find out that they've been selected?
Right. Well, we do call the store, and that is my favorite day of the year. Twice a year I get to do that, and I feel sorry for the people who sit right outside where my office is, because they hear me make the same phone call. And but we do call them, and we tell them, you know, that we're very excited to be able to feature great quilt shops across North America in the magazine, and that I'm honored to tell them that they're going to be a part of the next upcoming issue. And I mean, some shop owners cry, some people scream, some people just stop breathing altogether and tell me they're going to pass out. But it's really super exciting. And I know how hard quilt shop owners work to make that experience a great one for their visitors. And so this is a great way really for us to honor them. And I tell them, you know, Quilt Sampler really is a magazine about independent quilt shops. It's not about what we do. It's about what they do. And it is great for us. Now, one thing I will say, we do try to make sure in every issue that we have some geographic diversity. We have shops from, you know, Canada and the U.S. featured in the magazine. We also try to make sure for the readers that no matter where you live in the country, there's some place that maybe in the course of a weekend you could make your way to it if you wanted to have a shop up. So, sometimes people will say, well, there's always more shops in this area or that area. But we really do try to make sure that we get some diversity across each issue so that you can find a place that's near to you.
Now, you actually go there, though, to do photos at some point.
Absolutely. So once we make that phone call and we have that big, exciting moment, one thing that's important, I think, for people to know is, at that point, I always ask the shop owner to keep it a secret from their customers for at least the first... We work on Quilt Sampler about 9 months out of the year, 9 months out of 12. So when I'm making those phone calls, let's say in September for the spring issue, or I'm making them in, I have to think about my timing here, in January or February for the fall issue, we ask them to keep it a secret from their customers. And the reason is because we're going to be there doing photography, they're going to be working on their project. And so that's the hard part, because often they're standing at the counter screaming, and then I say, but you have to keep it a secret from your customers. And they're like, okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, do the happy dance in the back room.
Yeah.
So we set up with them a time where we can go do photography, and we're actually at the store for about a day and a half. And we are able to shoot everything digitally while we're there. And we work around customers. They're open for business when we're there. Sometimes people are like, oh, do you shut the store? Nope. We're there doing, you know, while they're doing business. And it's always kind of fun. Sometimes people guess what we're doing there. And sometimes, you know, they just think we're just shooting photos of the shop and it looks great.
Yeah. Oh, how exciting. Yeah, it must be funny. Do any of the shoppers ever say to you, you know, what are you doing? Do they ask you directly?
Yes, they do. And we don't tell what we're there for. We always just tell them we're taking some publicity shots for the store.
Oh.
And that is what we're doing, essentially. So, you know, we think it's just skating onto the edge there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also funny because, as I tell the shop owners, most people don't come to the quilt shop that day thinking, I bet Quilt Sample will be here doing a photo shoot.
Yeah, right.
So
yeah.
For most people, it's not that unusual right. because they've seen website shots taken for the store or different advertising things that they're doing.
Yeah.
So
it's an easy way. Now, the shop, you said you mentioned it, and if anybody's seen the issue, the shops all do a project.
Absolutely. Every shop gets to do an exclusive project, and that's fun, too, because for many of them, they are pattern designers for their own stores, but they get regional distribution because of where they're located, and they just maybe don't expand beyond that. So it's an opportunity for our readers to see patterns from places they might not have seen before. But for other shops, it's their first experience in pattern design. They maybe haven't done that before, so we work through that process with them. And just like we try to have diversity in the shops, we also try to have diversity in the projects themselves. So mm-hmm. we ask them to start that process with us by doing sketches of their project. We don't actually work out of cloth at first because we want to make sure that it's all different. And I always tell the shops, my favorite example of this was we did have an issue where I knew exactly what the hot color was going to be the coming spring because 7 of the 10 sketches that we got in were all pink and green.
Oh my.
And, you know, we don't want to publish a magazine, obviously, with 7 pink and green projects because
right.
if you don't like pink and green, you're out. So we start with sketches and we go back and forth with them to make sure that there's something that will appeal to all different tastes of quilters picking it up. And maybe if the shop style isn't yours, their project might be. And also to make sure the level of difficulty in the projects and the size of things is varied as well.
Now, you can download these online, or are they only in print?
You can also download them at
allpeoplequilt.com/get-digital.
So Quilt Sampler magazines are there as well. And you can go at allpeoplequilt.com. You'll see one of the tabs at the top. We'll let you go to our magazines. And you can see Quilt Sampler there and see a slideshow of the different shops. And some of the shots that we don't get to use in the magazine are featured in that website as well.
So bonus.
There you go, bonus yeah. coverage.
And there's one other little part that's kind of unique for the article of where other places to visit.
Right. There's always, we try as much as possible as space will allow to put an out and about section in where there are some hot spots in the area. And sometimes people will say, well, gosh, you know, some of the biggest things in town weren't featured in there. And our goal in that little hot spots section or out and about is to give you the places that you'd send your girlfriend to. So I always ask the shop owner, you know, if there's a place close to you that you would send your girlfriend for lunch or a little shop that you might not find on your own, what are those places? So that's what we try to include there.
It's a really fun little feature to have added in. The basis of the whole thing is to be able to go visit these shops, use it as a travel guide.
And if not, it's also just a virtual shop hop in the pages of the magazine. And even if you can't visit them in person, you can visit them through the pages of the magazine. You can call to buy the things that you love that you see in the photographs. The shops are great about sending things out by mail. So even if you don't have a chance to visit them in person, do visit them in the pages of Quilt Sampler.
Oh, Jennifer, this is wonderful. It's so exciting. I love this behind-the-scenes stuff. So we're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back after this message with American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine. I'm your host, Pat Sloan.
So this wraps up another show of American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Visit us online at allpeoplequilt.com. Visit me at patsloan.com, and we'll see you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.